Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is The Morning Show with Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. I'm Susie Prez and...
I'm Chris Bessler. Good morning, Susie.
Good morning, Chris. I'm fine. This is the first full day of spring. It is March 21st and it is Wednesday.
Yeah, and it is pretty nice out there as well.
It's going to be one of those beautiful, beautiful days.
Yeah.
So we have a full schedule of guests this morning here on The Morning Show. Our first guest, why don't you introduce our first guest?
We're going to be talking with two representatives from the Panhandle Alliance for Education, board member Ross Longini. Ross, thanks for coming in.
Hey, good morning.
As well as the Resource Development Director, Amy Longenecker.
Amy, good morning, Chris and Susie.
Thank you both for coming in. We're going to be talking about the Panhandle Alliance for Education, a survey that's going to be rolled out shortly by PAFE, as we like to call it. And we're going to dive in on that in just a few minutes.
And we have two other interviews that were pre-recorded, and they're really exciting to me. Shannon Williamson from the Lake Pendere Waterkeeper will be a short interview talking about the Burlington Northern extra train tracks across the water. And then the third interview is with two high school students who organized the recent walkout at the high school, Ben Robinson and Dutton Rogers. And those are both recorded interviews
that I did on
Monday night.
And that walkout you're referring to, that was actually commemorating the 17 kids that were lost in the shooting in Florida.
In Parkland.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the kids here were trying to show solidarity with that. And it raised some controversy in the community.
So, it did. And they talk about that. And they have another... project going that they also talk about.
Yeah. So good. We'll hear that then.
Yeah.
But first, well, we know it's beautiful out there right now. What's in store for the weather?
You want to hear the weather. Currently, it's 30 degrees. It feels warmer to me. Today, we have a 40% chance of rain, mainly after 2 p.m., so it's going to be nice for a while. Cloudy with a high near 49 today. Tonight, 70% chance of rain likely, and low of 36. And on Thursday, an 80% chance of rain during the day, high of 49. And Thursday night, 100% chance of rain. It could be a little breezy and a low of 32. So there you go. We're going to get our spring rain.
Yeah, it's kind of classic spring weather. A few other things going on outside. The sunrise this morning was at 6:48 a.m. It set at 6:59 p.m. Over the course of the last week, as the days are getting longer, approaching summer, we now have gained 26 minutes of daylight per day.
We're all saying yay.
Yeah. Gotta like that. And let's see, up in the skies, the first quarter moon is coming Saturday. So it's actually pretty gorgeous with a little crescent moon happening there. And of course, you mentioned earlier that spring started yesterday. We hit the actual vernal equinox, as it's called, I think at around 9:15 a.m. yesterday. Today's the first full day of spring. The vernal equinox is that day when the amount of sun time and the amount of night time are exactly equal. It's also, interestingly, it's the time of year when the sun rises exactly in the east. It's swinging north now. It's been to the south during the winter. So when you see the sun come up, that's due east right
due
now.
Due east right now.
Yeah, interesting
factoid. It did feel very balanced yesterday.
Yeah, it was a very balanced day. Other things going on around town, the Celebration of Community Northern Stars Rising event is Friday at the Heartwood Center. That's put on by the Pendere Arts Council. And it's a showcase of local performers. Great event if you're interested in our local performing arts scene. And that, again, is Friday. And there are a whole bunch of other good things going on. There's a John Craigie dinner concert at DeLuna's on Thursday and Friday. I'm not sure there's any tickets left for that.
They're sold out. But just so you know, John Craigie will be here live in the KRFY studio at 2 o'clock on Friday for a live interview. He's bringing his guitar. And he said, the reason I'm coming up is because I love KRFY and I like doing interviews there.
Yeah,
so we'll be here with him.
And John Craigie, unfortunately, you won't be able to get the ticket now. Watch for it for next time he's in town, because he's a great singer, songwriter, great storyteller. I bet the interview will be great.
It will. And it will be a little bit of a showcase of his new CD that just came out on the 14th.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Might want to buy that. And, of course, there's a ton of other things going on around our town. You can check the community calendars that are on KRFY.org, or those are provided by SandpointOnline.com. You can see them there as well. And with that, let's get into the top topic of the morning here. That, again, we're speaking with two folks from the Panhandle Alliance for Education, Board Member Ross Longini and Resource Development Director Amy Longenecker. Thanks again for coming in, Ross and Amy. Yeah. And I know you have an important community survey that's coming up, and we're going to talk about that. But first, give us the brief description of what the Panhandle Alliance for Education is all about.
Sure, Chris. Thanks. The Panhandle Alliance for Education is a not-for-profit organization that was founded in 2002 with the mission of promoting excellence in education through the Lake Pend Oreille School District. So we've, over the last 15 years or so, we've partnered with Lake Pend Oreille School District to find ways to really leverage education. And we can, in a few minutes, we can go into some of the different programs that we have and how we do that. But really, it's all about providing opportunities for our kids to have an excellent education here in the Sandpoint area.
Mm-hmm. We work with the school district. We have credibility with our teachers. We love supporting them in any way that we can. And we have a strong momentum with our business community as well.
What, you know, you've kind of touched on a little bit. But what are the needs that Panhandle Alliance for Education is specifically trying to address with its different programming?
You know, things have changed over the years in our school. Each class coming up is a new group of students. There's new curriculum needed with the updated state and national standards. Teachers need the professional development to stay informed on these standards, and kids need to be ready for what's to come in life. So there's constant change in the world, and therefore the schools mm-hmm. also have constant change.
And I'll speak to the change thing a little bit too, because since I've lived here so darn long, and remembering the birth of PAFE back in 2002, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. That was at a time when the schools were really suffering. And the group was formed out of a concern by a lot of citizens that the schools were having problems, and it came along at a time when schools here were in fact having a lot of problems administratively. I'd say teacher morale was down. Of course, we always have facility issues going on, but since then we have a district that has succeeded to an amazing degree, I'd say, because the district, our school kids are getting a good education now, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, things have changed dramatically in the last 15 years for the better, and certainly mainly because of the work that the school district itself has done, but certainly the partnering with the Panhandle Alliance for Education with Lake Pend Oreille School District has been one of the key elements as well. Now, I think we're one of the top rated schools in the state. In some measures, we're I think, in the number two spot. And when we look at it nationally, I believe that we're in the top 20% of high schools in the nation. So things have really improved dramatically. But as Amy mentioned, there's just a lot of change going on. One of the areas, for instance, that is changing dramatically across the country and frankly across the world is the need for improved STEM education. So science, technology, engineering, math is an area that we're, you know, really keen on, and we need to make sure that our students are prepared for those opportunities that are going to be more math and science related in the future.
So tell us about some of the specific programs that PAFE has to help bolster education.
Well, the programs, one that I'm very fond of is the Ready for Kindergarten program. When we moved to Sandpoint, we had three littles, and I was very concerned. We moved from Denver, and we were concerned about education in Idaho. So we came across Ready for Kindergarten, funded by Panhandle Alliance for Education, and we were so pleased with the support we felt as parents. The classes are for parents to teach you how to engage with your child, get your child from birth to five ready to enter kindergarten. A child that starts behind stays behind. So they give you toys, tools, activities to really get your child ready to learn.
And that's dealing with really young kids, as you mentioned.
Birth to five,
and
yes.
And it's really, you know, of course, it helps the kids, but this is really to help the parents help their kids succeed
exactly.
in school. And these classes are held twice a year, I believe?
Three times a year.
Three times a year, okay.
Spring,
right.
fall, fall, winter, spring.
Yeah.
Exactly. They also stress just reading to your child from birth. I mean, they're really supportive of teaching a parent how to be a parent.
I'm wondering, Amy, if over the years, since this has been a part of PAEE for a long time, this early child, early get ready program, have you noticed a difference?
Absolutely.
Have you been tracking that when parents get involved early with their children and read to them and interact more, have you seen a difference in the students' readiness for school?
Well, I can speak personally. All of the teachers that my boys have had in kindergarten and first grade could tell that they had been through the Ready for Kindergarten program. Our results are measured. Teachers have those measurements. They can tell that a child has been, or parents have been through this program.
Mm-hmm. And really, it's learning how to help their children learn.
Yeah, actually, the Ready program itself is a program that goes well beyond just the Sandpoint area, and the research on Ready has validated that over 90% of the kids that quote unquote graduate from the Ready program are at or above the readiness level for reading when they enter kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's terrific. And as you had mentioned right off the bat, Amy, the ability of kids to start on good footing, it goes all the way through their school. If they start behind, they stay behind. If they can start ahead, they'll learn to excel in their later grades as well.
Exactly.
Very important. And there's another big program that the Pan Am Alliance for Education does. It's the teacher grants.
Absolutely. To date, we've delivered over $3,625 million in grants and educational programs to the Lake Pend'Oreille School District. So we're proud of that.
Yeah.
What do some of those grants look like that really significantly support the teachers who are really making the difference in the classroom?
They are. They go the extra mile just to, you know, fill out the application for the grant, receive the grant, but then implement it in the classrooms. They're going above and beyond for sure. I actually brought a friend. I know our viewers can't see, and I hope my friend doesn't bark, but I brought a lucky puppy. Every first grader gets a lucky puppy. And this is a stuffed puppy, a non-judgmental reading buddy. And so through the course of the year, they read to this little guy, and they earn maybe a collar or a tag or a vet visit, according to how many books they read. What they don't realize is that they're building vocabulary, improving their accuracy, and enhancing their fluency of reading all the way. And at the end of the year, they get to take this little guy home as a trusted companion for life. We have three at my house.
So
three new family members, yes.
So during the summer, when they're out in the yard reading,
exactly.
They can bring their little puppy Lucky with them.
Yeah.
So Lucky was a great example, as Amy indicated, of a grant through one of the teacher grant programs. Some of the other ones, I come from a bit of a science background, so I'm excited about maybe some of the scientific ones. So, for instance, one of our teachers said, hey, I'd love to have the components to build, have the kids build solar-powered cars. And so our teachers don't always have those funds in their budgets to do things like that. So this is where the teacher grants come into play. And so that was one of the programs that we funded. Another program is we wanted to do a brain lab in, I think it was in junior high school. And that was this ability for kids to actually dissect real animal brains. And so provide funding for that particular science teacher to purchase, I think it was sheep brains is what they were experimenting with. So those are a couple of examples of specific grants that teachers write. And what we really encourage is for those teachers to write very kind of innovative or creative grants, new ways of learning, new ways of studying that might be a bit experimental and therefore not necessarily funded in their normal budgets.
And teachers get these grants by, what's that process? If you're a teacher, you have something you want to do, there's no funding from the school for that. You can ask PAEE to help with it.
Exactly. The grant application process opens in the beginning of the year and then closes, I believe, around the beginning of March. We've got a committee of 12 people and a rubric that they complete. They read every single grant thoroughly and then make their decisions. And then we award those grants in May so they can start preparing their extra activity for the next year.
Mm-hmm. I think people don't realize that teachers work all year long.
Oh, they do.
They're preparing. Absolutely. The first day of summer, they're preparing for the fall.
Yes.
And having the support of PAEF with maybe an idea that they have. They've seen their students really would excel with this idea. They can apply for a grant with PAEF.
Let's touch on another program by PAEF. It's a math collaborative classroom. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. PAEF every year looks at the opportunity to partner with the school district on what we call strategic programs. So they're programs that aren't for one teacher in one classroom, but they're for maybe a lot of teachers. And one of the areas that the school district saw a need for and PAEF partnered with them is this math collaborative classroom. And that's the ability to really teach elementary mathematics in a way that was very different. And one of the ways that we found is that having an instructional math coach that would partner with the teachers, the elementary teachers, and how to prepare a lesson plan for a math program and how to teach math differently. One of the biggest things that I think was a change, and again, me coming from more of a science and engineering background, I thought this was fantastic because this is real world stuff. It's real world that most people aren't sitting alone doing mathematics programs when they get into the workplace. They're working on a team of scientists or engineers or researchers, and that team needs to know how to collaborate during a mathematical endeavor. And that's exactly one of the elements of this teaching style.
Yeah. Well, so another, you mentioned that PAEF has Panhandle Alliance for Education. Don't want to fall on the acronym too much here. You know, it's been around for 15 years now, and Amy, you talked about it. It's evolving because educational needs are constantly evolving. But one of the remarkable feats of PAEF, and it was actually part of its mission from the start, was to set up an endowment fund. Can you tell us more about the Panhandle Alliance endowment fund and what that is and how it works?
It was just set up in hopes that Panhandle Alliance for Education would have money into perpetuity, just be able to provide grants year after year to all of these new students going through the grades. And we are currently just over 4 million.
So that's kind of an amazing feat in this small town.
It is.
And so the idea of the endowment fund is you don't touch the principal. And the principal is allowed to actually grow, but it also sheds off some interest each year that can be applied to the programs for which the endowment fund was created.
Yeah, that's correct, Chris. We do have that endowment fund invested with a couple of organizations, Inland Northwest Community Foundation and the Idaho Community Foundation, which are very reputable, stable investors, if you will, of funds like this. And so we do just get a certain amount of interest or dividends, if you will, off of that fund every year that we can then use to support the work that we do in the school district. Huh.
And of course, that's not the only way you need to get support for PAEF, though.
Yeah, that's correct.
You should be clear about that.
Yeah, we don't live off the endowment by any means. In fact, that only provides something in the neighborhood of 21% of our annual revenue right now. And so most of our annual revenue actually comes in the form of different fundraising activities that we do, like the summer gala that we do or the golf tournament that we partner with Lighthouse on.
Yeah, and it's in fact important to keep growing that endowment so it can reach an even greater amount that it can contribute back to the community.
Yeah, our near-term goal is to get that endowment up from the $4 million that Amy mentioned to $5 million, so we're continuing to invest in it.
Yeah, great. Okay, so let's talk about the survey. Panhandle Alliance for Education is about to come out with a survey. What's this about?
Sure, Chris. It's One of the things that the Panhandle Alliance for Education has done over the last year is we really have taken a look at our organization. It's been 15 years since we founded the organization, as we mentioned earlier. And now we're saying, well, what's new? What, you know? So we went through a pretty extensive visioning process over the last year. And a couple of things, new priorities or areas of focus came out that we wanted to take a harder look at. One of those areas of focus was to really look at communications. You know, who are the voices in the community that are advocating objectively for education? And another area was in parenting in general. And right now, we thought, well, the best thing for us to do is get out there and understand what our community wants, what our community's ideas are, what are their thoughts, and what is their level of awareness on different things relating to the value of education, how education is funded, how parents need to be supported as their children progress through different phases of their life. Amy mentioned earlier that we have a Ready for Kindergarten program, but you know, the reality is we really don't have like a Ready for College program or a Ready for High School program or anything like that. So we're exploring some of those elements to see if those would be beneficial for the community. And that's what the survey is about.
I was just going to say the readiness for high school. I think that's a missing link. And I think probably in your survey. So how is the survey being utilized? How is it? How do you connect? Is it still an open survey or is it done?
Actually, it hasn't opened yet. We're looking hopefully at Friday.
We'll be opening it on Friday. Yes.
This Friday, yes. And you can access a link to the survey on our website, www.panhandlealliance.org, or through our Facebook page, Panhandle Alliance for Education, or online through the Reader, the Daily Bee, or Sandpoint Online.
So they'll actually be able to see a ad or a prompt, hey, go take our survey and click on that and you'll jump over to the survey.
Exactly.
And of course, Panhandle Alliance will be doing a lot of other things to alert people to the survey. Is there a goal for how many people you'd like to have?
We're really hoping to have close to 1,000 people take the survey. So we're going to be doing all kinds of outreach methods. You'll see some information in the newspapers, both online and in print. You'll see, as we said, we'll have links, hot links off of a lot of these different media forums. In addition to that, we're going to try and get emails rolled out to as many people as we can so they can have a direct hot link, you know, so you don't have to, type in a particular URL to get to the survey. So
yeah, click and get there. And as you mentioned, I think one of the goals is to understand what the community understands about education. Because I think probably a lot of folks don't really know how education is funded in our community and how it's delivered.
Yeah, that's true. Education funding is obviously different state by state. And a lot of people may know or may not know that the level of funding per student in Idaho is ranked 49th out of 50. That's on the low end, not on the high end. So we're well below the national average in funding per student. And, you know, some of those, we just really want to understand what do people know and feel about education funding. It's only one element of the survey, but we think it's an important element going forward.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like a lot of people don't know what the Panhandle Alliance for Education does, and hopefully this survey will give us an inside look to what they do know and maybe how we can better communicate our mission and our goal within the school district.
Mm-hmm. Well, we take a lot of surveys out there. You take the survey, and then you never find out what the survey learned. It will be an opportunity for people to find out more about what we discover with the PAFE survey.
That's a great question, Chris. And I share your opinion. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a bit of a science, therefore a data geek. And so I love to know how surveys turn out. And often we never get to find that out. So absolutely, we will have those survey results posted when we get them all tabulated. It'll probably be in about a month from now on the website, Panhandle Lines.
I think that maybe after the primary election, we should invite you back in and have a discussion about what you discovered about how PAFE really does fill in the gap and what people understand about it And so I'm hearing you encourage people to go and take the survey that opens up on Friday.
Yes, again, the survey does open up on Friday, and yes, we would love to come back and share those results.
Okay. And again, to get to the survey, beginning Friday, you can go to www.panhandlealliance.org, or you can find it via the Panhandle Alliance Facebook page, or you'll keep an eye out on the media. There's going to be plenty of opportunities for people to spot, oh, hey, there's that survey. I can go take that. And it's important. We want everybody's opinion. We want the whole demographic, right, to get a kind of a, parents and even students themselves and teachers and faculty and just patrons of the school district, the folks that support it through their tax dollars.
Absolutely. And we really, really, I want to emphasize this, what Chris just said, is that we really do want everybody in the community that's interested to take it. You know, our community's demographics are changing. We have a lot of people that are coming here in semi-retirement or retirement, and we want to make sure that their voices are well heard, as in addition to everyone else.
Do you have a feeling that the public school district really counts on the work you're doing, that Panhandle Alliance for Education is doing, to make it possible? Being 49th in funding, they're going to rely on you guys quite a bit.
I feel like they do, yes. And, you know, it's an honor to be able to support the school district in this way, do our little part. As Ross said, you know, the educators in the classroom, they're doing the real work, the administrators, but just to compliment them or compliment their work with this, with our small piece, is an honor.
Well, Amy Longenecker and Ross Longini from Panhandle Alliance for Education, want to have one last word. We got about a minute left. Anything you want to tell us about Panhandle Alliance or the survey?
The survey only takes less than 5 minutes, and we would love to hear what you have to say.
And taking the survey is fun because you actually learn some stuff yourself. You're challenged to think about things. So folks, watch for that. And again, thank you, Ross and Amy, for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Yes. Yeah, and it sounds like we're going to have you back. We're going to take a short musical break. This is Bruno Mars, Count on Me. And then we'll be back with Shannon Williamson from the Lake Pendere Waterkeeper talking about railroads, bridges. So stay with us. Morning show will continue till 9 o'clock. This is Bruno Mars. And that was Bruno Mars, Count on Me. We're going to now go to a pre-recorded interview that I had with Shannon Williamson from the Lake Pendere Waterkeeper. This is about a 10-minute podcast or interview, recorded interview. And then we'll be right back with a little bit more of the morning show. So stay with us. Welcome, Shannon Williamson, Executive Director, Lake Pendere Waterkeeper.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, we want to find out about the Burlington Northern plan to put a railroad crossing across the lake. But first of all, Lake Pendere Waterkeeper is dedicated to protecting the water quality of Lake Pendere and its associated water, so they remain swimmable, fishable, and drinkable for future generations. And with that in mind, why are you so concerned about adding this train line?
Well, it's actually three additional bridges that would be built by BNSF over the next several years, about a 5-year period of time. We're concerned about the proposal for a couple different reasons. It would definitely facilitate a significant increase in rail traffic. Train volumes are expected to increase to about 114 trains a day by 2025. We have about 58 on the rail lines through Sandpoint every day right now. And we're concerned about a significant increase in transport of hazardous materials adjacent to and over our waterways. That could have a really serious impact on our local water quality if there was a derailment and a spill. But in addition to those environmental impacts, we're concerned about increases in noise pollution and air pollution, as well as traffic delays, delayed emergency response, and impacts to our local economy.
Are there other groups in this area that are also concerned about this potential?
Absolutely. I know that Idaho Conservation League is working with us as well to bring awareness to the community about the proposed project. And we've been contacted by numerous members of the community that have expressed their concerns.
So you said that right now we have 58 trains a day, and this extra train lines would increase it to 114 by 2025.
That's the expected capacity by 2025. I don't know if we'd see that kind of significant increase right away, but BNSF has even acknowledged that, you know, rail traffic volumes have steadily increased over the last three decades, and they're expecting them to continue to do so. That's the need. That's why they say this project is needed.
So what permitting agencies are involved, and what are their respective roles to have this proposed extra tracks?
There's three agencies involved, two federal agencies and one state agency. So the lead federal agency is the United States Coast Guard. The second federal agency is the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And the state agency is the Idaho Department of Lands. And they all have different responsibilities. As the lead agency, Coast Guard, most importantly in our minds, is responsible for what's called the NEPA process, or National Environmental Policy Act. And that's where they determine, evaluate all the different impacts that could result from this type of project and determine what actions can be taken to either mitigate or alternatives that could be put into place. And right now, based on the notice that was put out by the Army Corps, it said that they would only BNSF would only be required to do an environmental assessment, which is not nearly as robust as a full environmental impact statement. And so we're very, very strongly advocating that a full EIS be done for this project rather than just an environmental assessment, which could easily end up with a finding of no significance, which would be very, very concerning. Meanwhile, the Army Corps is also responsible for permitting part of this project, specifically for dredging and filling. They're going to need to fill some of our nearside waterways as well as some wetland areas in order to build this additional infrastructure over the lake and over Sand Creek. The third bridge would be over Bridge Street going to City Beach. And then Department of Lands also has a different regulatory authority where they permit encroachments, which is anything that's permanently fixed to the lake bed. And so they look at another set of parameters to determine if they'll permit the project.
One of the things that folks in Bonner County are aware of is how many trains do come through here at this point in time. And there's a great concern about not just a spill, but also the traffic on the tracks and stopping traffic on roadways. And with this additional lines, that would increase.
Well, it's interesting because if you ask BNSF or what they've been advertising here locally is that this infrastructure project would eliminate those wait times. It is a bottleneck, and they're saying by putting in these extra bridges and extra track that wait times would decrease. But given the fact that this infrastructure project will allow significant increases in traffic, trains will be moving. They probably won't be stopped on the sides like we see right now. But given the fact that most of our crossings are at grade, meaning they're not separated, we don't have underpasses or overpasses, it means that trains will be moving, but the gates will be down, and you'll still be waiting there.
One of the things I've heard people say is, would that require then Burlington Northern to put in underpasses and overpasses to accommodate so much more train traffic?
They're not required to. I think that would be something that they should take a very serious look at, something that we'll be definitely advocating for. Unfortunately, railroads are not required to pay a significant amount towards those types of improvements for communities. They're really, at best, only responsible for 5%. Of those improvements within a city. And these are incredibly expensive projects that we just can't afford.
Are we talking $2 million for an underpass or overpass?
I've heard up to $10 million.
That makes sense. So with all of this potential, and this is quite a big project, it impacts a lot of different folks, people, the water quality, the potential. Is there a timeline for public comment? Can the public have a say on this?
The public absolutely will have a say in this, and I encourage everybody listening to get involved, and we're here to help with that. So what we know right now is the fastest timeline here is with Army Corps. They have a 30-day public comment period out right now, which would end on March 28th. I have heard, although this has not yet been confirmed by Army Corps, that there will be an extension, and I'm happy to share that information when I get that update. Again, Army Corps is only looking for comments from the public that are specific to what they will permit, which is filling. And so it's really important that people understand that their comments, in order for them to be effective, are specific to that component of the project. And they can find more about what Army Corps is looking for through their public notice, which is linked on our website, www.lpow.org. The next public comment period is open till May 23rd. That's Idaho Department of Lands. They will be holding two public hearings on May 23rd, one in the morning at 8 o'clock in Ponderay, one at 6 o'clock in evening in Sandpoint. Again, that information is on our website. They are looking for permits specific to their regulatory authority. They have also confirmed that Army Corps will be present, so this is an opportunity for folks to address both what Army Corps and Idaho Department of Lands are permitting specifically. If people need help on understanding what those components are, they are more than welcome to reach out to me. Perhaps most importantly, is the Coast Guard component. Again, this is where that's the agency that will receive comments that are applicable to all the broader implications of these proposals that I already mentioned, whether you're concerned about traffic delays, delayed emergency response, noise, air, water pollution. All of those things need to be directed to the Coast Guard rather than the other agencies that I mentioned. And fortunately, I was able to have a conversation with a representative from the Coast Guard earlier today, and their timeline is vastly different from the other two agencies because they are the lead agency and will be overseeing actual construction of the bridge. They are accepting comment right now, and we have that information as well on our website, the contact person to get in touch with to send in all of your comments about the broader implications of the proposal. This person also confirmed, at least verbally, that they will hold a public hearing in Sandpoint. He could not give me a timeline for that at the time that we talked this morning, but he did mention that there would be a public hearing to be held in the community, which is very, very good news.
You mentioned that folks could get a hold of you. How can they do that?
So you can either get a hold of me through email, which is Shannon, S-H-A-N-N-O-N, at Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper, that's singular, .org, or you can call me at our office phone, 208-597-7188, or you can just stop by our office located at 100A Cedar Street.
Right next to the Cedar Street Bridge.
Right.
So if someone from the public wanted to get involved right now or find out more, they can get a hold of you, but wanted to get involved, is there anything that anyone can do right now besides waiting for these public hearings?
Yes, absolutely. There is the public hearing, but other public comment periods are open. So if they want to comment by supplying a written comment, they can to those different agencies. But what I've really been advocating for is that community members specifically request to the Coast Guard through the contact information on our website that a full environmental impact statement is required rather than just an environmental assessment. EISs are required for proposals that it's obvious there will be a significant impacts, environmental impacts, and for building three bridges adjacent to and over our waterways and that are critical habitat for endangered species like bull trout. There's no question in my mind and in most people's mind that this will have a significant impact. But it's very, very important that people request the Coast Guard to perform a full EIS rather than an EA. And they can do that simply through email. We have the information to back up that argument on our website.
Again, that website is
www.lpow.org.
So lots of information is there to help disseminate this huge amount of information. Three different regulatory agencies, all with
different timelines.
Aspects, different timelines. But it is possible, as you say, that folks can get involved and maybe make a difference.
Absolutely. The gentleman I spoke with from the Coast Guard said he's already received, you know, numerous comments that they have to wade through and, it's for them to respond to as well. All of your public comments have to be given a response. So they do make a difference. And so I really encourage people out there, if you're concerned, to really use your voice because it's important.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, and we hope you will come back again. Shannon Williamson, Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper.
Thanks for having me, Susie.
Okay, thank you. And that was a recorded interview with Shannon Williamson about the proposed Burlington Northern extra train track across the waterways. And we're going to go right into another recorded interview that I had the opportunity to sit down with two high school students who were the organizers of the student walkout that took place on the 14th of March. And they had a lot to say about why they did it and how the support from the community. And so this is a very interesting interview. I'll be back right after the interview. Stay with us. The morning show will continue until 9 o'clock. Again, this is Ben Robinson, Dutton Rogers, high school student organizers of the recent student walkout. Thank you, Dutton Rogers and Ben Robinson. You are both high school students, and you organized the recent student walkout that took place Wednesday, March 14th. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having
thank
us.
Thank you.
So how did the walkout go? How many students? What took place? Was it orderly?
So we walked out at 10 a.m. Last Wednesday. It was great success, we think. We had about 100 students come out of class, and we're doing it as a memorial to the victims of the Parkland High School shooting, which was exactly a month ago from the date of the walkout. And we were just doing it to honor them and to facilitate discussion about how we can fix the problem of school shootings.
Yeah, I would say it was very orderly. We had 2 minutes of silence at the beginning to remember those lost at Parkland High School. And I was very impressed with the maturity shown by our fellow peers. It was, very orderly. Afterwards, we all had discussion, and a few students were encouraged to go and write letters to local legislators. And so some chose to go in and do that as well.
So typically, or in general, what inspired you to call for this walkout? And as you were saying, Dutton, before we started the interview, it was pretty much you and Ben who organized it. So what inspired you to...
So about a month ago, is when the Parkland school shooting happened, and the movement that followed immediately after inspired both Ben and I. And we started talking about how we as student leaders at Sandpoint High School, we're both in student council. We just talked about how, someone needs to take a stand, someone needs to take initiative, and we thought that should be us.
I saw on social media about the National Women's March was calling for a student walkout on the 14th of March. And I decided that Dutton and I, as student leaders, we were both passionate about having a walkout. And I just decided that it could happen either disorderly, and one way or another was going to happen. And I thought it could happen with being very orderly and organized and be productive, or it could be chaotic and nobody could really take charge and have any idea what was going on. So I decided to take the more positive route of that.
And the point of doing a walkout is to send a message. And so part of the way we sent that message was to make sure everyone was unified in our cause. We contacted the Bee and the Reader to make sure it was getting out to the community what we were doing. And so people heard our stance and what we wanted to spread with it.
Initially, how did you get the word out to the students? What was your mode of communication?
We used social media as our main mode of communication, and also just word of mouth. A lot of kids were very excited about the walkout already, and so it just took us creating a few social media profiles on platforms like Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat, and just getting the word out that it was happening and that it was organized.
Most students knew about it already, so it just took that effort to say, okay, people here at Sandpoint are doing it. There will be other people walking out for me. And so that's what happened.
So the students who did not join in the walkout, how were they respectful of your decision to do this?
Yeah. So a lot of students chose to wear shirts that expressed their opinions of pro-gun things. And I totally respect that. We're in America, all about the First Amendment, freedom of speech. And that's what we are using, to walk out. So I have a lot of respect for those people who did their own demonstration. But overall, through the school, I say about half the school wasn't participating either way. But
a lot of kids didn't walk out purely because they didn't know the true purpose of the walkout. And we tried as hard as we could to spread the true purpose of what it was. But of course, our purpose was a little bit different than a lot of the other walkouts that occurred across the nation. So a lot of kids didn't know the true purpose of walking out. And so they decided that they weren't going to walk out unless they knew what they were walking out for. And so I have tremendous respect for those who decided to stay in class purely because like they just didn't know what they would be walking out for. And of course, unfortunately, there's always going to be those students who walk out just because others are doing so. But I have respect for those who didn't walk out because they didn't know why or because they didn't like the kind of buzz that it had mm-hmm. around it.
So if you had had a little bit more time and a little bit more opportunity to get the word out about what it was really for, you may have had a different response, but you feel good about the response that you did have.
Yeah, for sure.
And how did the school administration and staff respond to making it possible and your initial request to do it?
So initially, Ben and I, we went and just talked to the principal, Mr. Robertson, and you know, we just had an open discussion with him of what our feelings were about it. And he was open to talking more about it, but he didn't want to make it political. So that's why we really pushed it as a memorial to the students. And then also trying to start discussion and not, you know, having an anti-gun or a pro-gun approach to it. We just wanted to keep it a friendly environment. And so that's really helped us to get strong administration support. And then they were, you know, of course, very neutral on it. Teachers were neutral. Teachers kept teaching through the period. And the administration, I believe a couple of them just came outside to supervise and just stood in the back to make sure everything was orderly. But they were very hands-off. And just as far as punishing students, they just used the normal, marked it as a truancy, and turned that truancy into a tardy. And so it wasn't like you're getting suspended or anything for walking out.
For your walkout, it wasn't about gun safety or gun decision-making. But across the country, that was part of the walkout. How do you think this walkout would impact decision-making and policy-making?
Well, so we decided to make it more towards as a memorial and steer less away from gun control because we wanted to include as many kids as we can and get as many perspectives into that discussion that we had as we could. And so we're hoping that the impact that it has, we just hope that legislators from our area and from our state just see that kids are concerned about school safety and these school shootings that are happening. And I guess that's what we're mainly hoping that they see out of our walkout.
Yeah, we just want to see things happen. Kind of interesting, on the same day that we did the walkout, our school changed to a, what's the term they use, Ben?
A single point of entry.
Single point of entry, yeah. So they lock all the doors at the start of the day except for the front door. And so that's, you know, one of the solutions some people have come up with to help eliminate hazards in schools. But, you know, just seeing more things like that, more action from our legislators is what we want to see. It's kind of sad when the people who can't even vote are the most motivated people across the country to see something happen. And we think that, you know, our parents should be more concerned for our safety. And so we were just sickened by that and wanted to see something happen.
On that same realm, have you heard from other students? Are they concerned about feeling safe at school? Is this something that permeates the school day?
I would say, yeah, it is. I mean, recently we had that shootout that was not too far away from our school. And I heard from a few of my friends at the school that they were scared because they didn't really know what was happening. There were just rumors around the school that there was a shooter. I fortunately had some pretty good information about it. As soon as I got to school, there were some well-informed students and teachers that let me know what was happening. But fortunately, the word of mouth isn't the most reliable form of communication. So, I mean, kids are scared, and that's just an example of how, like, some kids feel about... I mean, school's pretty open. There's multiple incidents of people coming in and kind of giving us, shaking the school up a little bit. It's definitely something on our minds.
It does live in the school.
Yeah, yeah. It varies, of course, from student to student. And we do live in a small town, but we do live in a very gun-prevalent town. So for some people, that's very scary. Other people, that's very comforting.
So you had your first school walkout. And this Saturday, around the country, there's another action taking place. It's called March for Our Lives. There's one planned in Coeur d'Alene and Spokane. Is there something planned for Sandpoint? And are you involved in the planning?
Yes. So Ben and I have been helping to plan this march. And we're doing it at 10 a.m. on Saturday. And we are hopefully going to meet in the City Beach parking lot. And then still trying to pin down a certain location. But hopefully the information about that will be able to spread through social media. And we are going to march around the town. We have a route set, and we are going to ask for common sense gun reform, things like background checks, deeper background checks, nationwide background checks, limits on high capacity magazines, and things like bump stocks, things that most Americans agree on and just haven't been done by our legislators.
I'd say a big difference between the walkout that we had at our school and this upcoming march is we tried to include as a large majority of our student population and include a lot of those variety of viewpoints within our walkout. And this march seems a lot more political kind of action that'll be happening down at City Beach.
Okay. Are you going to create an events page on Facebook for the march?
I mean, I haven't even thought about that yet. I'm more worried about advertising to the students. The Women's March organization and the Bonner County Democrats are both helping us to organize this. And so they're helping to spread their networks, which is a lot more Facebook-sided. With the youth side, we're a lot more on Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter. Okay. So we're helping to get, you know, a lot of student population there.
Sounds good. Well, I want to thank you for coming in and sharing a little bit about what happened with the student walkout and to tell us about the upcoming Saturday March for Our Lives. It'll take place at the City Beach at 10 o'clock. So thank you, Dutton Rogers and Ben Robinson, Sandpoint High School students.
Thanks again for having us.
Yeah. And that was, again, high school students who organized the recent student march, student walkout, and now they're organizing the March for Our Lives for Saturday. This is 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show. We are continuing. And what I'd like you to know now is that tomorrow on the morning show, Jim Healy will be the host. His guest will be Debbie Love from the Bonner County Community Food Bank. That's at 8 on 88.5 KRFY. And on Friday, we're having an extra morning show. Julie Calamine and myself, Susie Prez, we'll have guests from Trout Creek Unlimited. We wanted to get in a little interview with them. And then on Friday afternoon at 2 p.m., I'll have the singer-songwriter John Craigie, who has two shows scheduled here in Sandpoint at DeLuna's on Thursday night and Friday night. But he'll be stopping by the studio with his guitar in hand to play a few tunes, introduce his new album, and tell us a few tales from the road. And that will be at 2 p.m. right here on 88.5 on Friday. So you can tune in for those. Next week, the morning show schedule, you can check our website probably around Sunday to see that, or on Facebook. And let's see what time it is. We have just a little bit more we can talk about, a few things going on. If you did not get to hear this whole morning show today, you can tune in to our website podcast page and find us there at krfy.org. We also stream live there, so if you don't have a computer or a radio, you can always hear us on your computer. And with that, we're going to go out with a John Craigie song. This is All of July, it's called. And like I said, he'll be live here in the studio on Friday at 2 p.m. So thanks for tuning into the morning show. We hope that you have a beautiful day. This is John Craigie, All of July.